Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday, June 23rd, 2017. Yes, the weekend is near, ladies and gents. We plan on sending you into the weekend feeling good with a full hour of great sports talk radio. Welcome to the show. You are now tuned in to WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. And on today's Current Sports, we, of course, will have a full recap of last night's NBA draft. Which names were taken? Were there any local kids that made their professional basketball dreams come true? And did anything go down that surprised anyone? Well, I think that's an understatement. A ton of moves made, including a blockbuster trade that sent a household name for the Chicago Bulls to Minnesota. We'll have a full recap of the NBA draft as we will invite DeSean Tate of CBS Radio down in Atlanta to help us out with that conversation. And we will also have on the show Renee Hill, mother of the late MSU football player Mylon Hicks, who sadly was gunned down outside of a Calgary bar in Canada last year in September. Sad stuff there. We will check in with Renee and talk about how she's been coping in the last 9 months in lieu of that news. And on the back end of the show, it is Friday, and each and every Friday, we love to roll in the swap meet. Swap out the negative energy that you may have bottled up throughout the week and swap it with some positive energy. As we dub this segment, the swap meet with James Moore. Of course, James is a former MSU football great, played on the 1988 Rose Bowl championship team, and is the founder of the philanthropic campaign Speaking with a Purpose, or SWAP. You don't want to miss that. James is going to preach on the NBA draft and so much more. You don't want to miss that. And we, of course, will put a bow on the week that has been here on WKAR's Current Sports with Reflection Friday. All of that and more. Be a part of the show. Pick up the phone. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I see many of you are already weighing in right now. We haven't even discussed anything yet. my man Ben Grimes, he's always on. He's on that keyboard, Isaac. Weigh in via facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet us. Two ways you can do that, at WKAR_sports, or even tweet me personally at Al Martin WKAR. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Even though there were no Michigan State men's basketball players that were drafted last night in the NBA draft, there was one Michigan men's basketball star who was taken in the first round with the number 17 pick in last night's NBA draft. The Milwaukee Bucks selected Michigan's DJ Wilson. The Bucks, who are known as a long, versatile team, stayed true to form in drafting the 6'10" forward from Sacramento, California, who has a 7'3" wingspan. Talk about length, right? The newly hired Bucks GM, John Horst, said that DJ was at the top of their list for a long time and that they were happy to see him fall to their spot at 17. Last season, with Coach John Beilein and the Wolverines, Wilson averaged 11 points per game, 5 boards per game, 1.5 blocks per game, and almost 2 assists per game. He also shot 53% from the floor and 37% from three-point range. DJ Wilson isn't the only player to find an NBA home, though. Due to free agency, Derek Walton Jr., former Wolverine, and Zach Ervin, also a former Wolverine, will be heading to Orlando and Miami, respectively, to join the Magic and the Heat. Ervin, a 6'6" guard, had an agreement to play in the Las Vegas Summer League with the Heat, and Walton, a 6'1" point guard, will reportedly join the Orlando Summer League. Now, Ervin finished his career at Michigan 13th all-time in points with 1,610, and Walton Jr. finished 22nd all-time with a little over 1,400. Now, both players went into the draft last night with a mindset that their name may not be called. According to DraftExpress.com's Jonathan Givony, Walton was ranked number 73 on his ranking of the top 100 pre-draft prospects and didn't list Ervin at all. NBADraft.net tagged Walton at number 89 and Ervin at number 91. Now, with the 12th overall pick in the 2017 draft, the Detroit Pistons took Duke sharpshooter Luke Kennard. Kennard shot very well for Duke, 44% from downtown to be exact, last season, and addressed a need for the Pistons, who ranked 28th from beyond the arc last year. Many people believe Kennard to be the best shooter coming out of this year's draft class. Now, in his post-draft presser, Piston coach and president of basketball operations Stan Van Gundy praised Kennard's offense but was wary of the marksman's defense. Van Gundy said that Kennard was the best offensive wing player on the board at 12. Van Gundy went on to say that he had some incredible games where he was great down the stretch. Now, when the questions turned to Kennard's defense, Stan Van became a little wary, saying he's got to change his defensive approach entirely. Wow, a complete overhaul, right? Van Gundy said Kennard could play good offensive basketball in an NBA game, but he's got to work on his game at the other end of the floor if he ever wants to get on the floor in the Motor City. All right, with the NBA draft coming and going last night, it's now the NHL's turn to take center stage and give some of the great young hockey talents a chance to realize their professional dreams. The New Jersey Devils hold the first overall pick in the NHL draft, which starts tonight, and will likely select one of two players, 18-year-old Nolan Patrick from the Brandon Wheat Kings out of the West Hockey League, has been the consensus number one pick for a long time. In his four-year career with the Wheat Kings, Patrick scored 92 goals in 163 regular season games played. The other name that has been projected to go number one in some mock drafts is another 18-year-old, Nico Hischier. Am I saying that right? I hope I'm saying that right, Jacob. You wrote it phonetically.
Hischier. Sorry, I tried to sound it out there for you.
All good, man. From Switzerland, actually. He had 86 points in 57 games played last season for the Halifax Mooseheads. Is that really a name? The Halifax Mooseheads. That is probably the most read. I remember you did a segment when you filled in for me last summer. You did a segment on crazy minor league baseball names.
No. I did a name on Redskins. Oh, yeah. Mike from Saginaw called in with some crazy name.
Mike from Saginaw thought you were doing a segment on crazy minor league baseball names. This has to top any name that Mike brought up. The Halifax Mooseheads. That's one for the books. Concerning the Detroit Red Wings, they hold the number 9 pick in this year's draft. It's the first time in more than a quarter century that the Wings have a pick in the top 10, and we will keep you posted on that, folks. Also, folks, the Detroit Tigers. And that pause was because my mama is calling me right now. Mom, please stop calling me as I'm trying to do Facebook Live here. The Detroit Tigers, they left town winless and swept. At their lowest point in two, and I should say, they were swept by the Seattle Mariners. Let's get to the point here. They were swept by the Seattle Mariners. It's been a horrible outing for the Tigers. It was at Safeco Field where they fell into the basement in the American League Central. Francisco Rodriguez was absolutely horrible last night, giving up a walk-off to lose that game. I tuned in the final innings. The Tigers are now 32-40. This latest loss was the Tigers' 11th loss in the past 14 games. I may comment on the Tigers later on during Reflection Friday. Stay tuned for that. Michigan State will induct 5 Spartans into its Athletics Hall of Fame on Thursday, September 28th. As part of its annual Celebrate Weekend, it was announced yesterday to the media via email. The 2017 Hall of Fame class includes Bob Apiza, who we actually had on the show last summer from Hawaii. Gotta love Bob Apiza. Joe Baum, soccer. Bob Castleman, track and field. Kristen Haney in basketball, who was recently inducted into the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. And Dr. Clarence Underwood, administration. Now, the Celebrate 2017 weekend includes the 8th annual Varsity Letter Jacket presentation and Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Thursday, September 28th, and then a special recognition of the Hall of Famers during the Michigan State and Iowa football game at Spartan Stadium on Saturday, September 30th. So mark your calendars there. And unfortunate news here. But a pioneer in the world of Michigan State athletics has passed away, folks. Former Michigan State All-American guard Frank Cush, who helped the Spartans to a national championship in both 1951 and 52, passed away yesterday. He was 88 years old, a 3-year letter winner from 1950 to 52 under Hall of Fame coach Biggie Munn. Cush anchored MSU's defensive line during its undefeated national championship season back in 1952, earning first-team All-American honors as a senior. Cush was also a longtime coach at Arizona State University, coaching the Sun Devils from 58 to 79. He was also inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 95 and Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame in 2000. In 2000. And we will have more on the passing of Frank Cush during next week's show. We will also try and snag Bob Apiza to talk about this incredible honor being inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame. All right. And lastly, despite scorching heat, junior Caitlin Daniels finished 8th in the discus at the U.S. Track and Field Championships at Hornet Stadium in California. The event was delayed several hours due to high temps. Last season, Daniels concluded the discus competition in 10th. Daniels finished 6th. At the NCAA Championships in Eugene, Oregon on June 10th. Great outing for Caitlin Daniels. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR. Let's start the show. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports, folks. I'm your host, Al Martin. What a night it was in New York City at Barclays Arena. The NBA draft, how fun it was. A lot going on, I must say. A lot of surprises as well. And we want to take your calls and get your comments on any surprises that you may have noted when watching what took place in New York yesterday. Fun draft. I tell you what, though, I did not expect DJ Wilson to go that early. That early in the draft, that was a bit shocking to me. Number 17, actually, even before Caleb Swanigan. And, you look at Biggie. I really loved how his game matured after his freshman year. But if someone would have told me when watching the Big Ten men's basketball year last season that Caleb Swanigan would not be one of the first, if not the first, players chosen from the Big Ten Conference in this year's draft, and instead DJ Wilson would be that guy, I would have said you're absolutely crazy. But hey, what do we know, right? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. I have a few takeaways that I want to get to when it comes to tonight's, well, I should say to last night's draft. First off, I have to talk about this trade that happened last night just as the draft was going along. And this is why I love watching the NBA draft more so than any other draft. I think the NFL, it lasts forever, like 20 days. It's like, come on. And after a while, I just stopped tuning in after probably like the third round. And I'm like, just catch me up via updates on my cell phone. The reason why I love the NBA draft is because it's one night, two rounds, good night. That's why I love it. I don't need, you know, day after day after day to have the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. Quick and easy. But it's also filled with a ton of drama. A ton of drama. And last night we saw a bit of that drama because the Minnesota Timberwolves, yeah, they were involved in a big trade with the Chicago Bulls that actually has sent Jimmy Butler, a name that I came on yesterday's Current Sports and said that I believe that Jimmy is going to stay with the Chicago Bulls. He had a loyalty to the Chicago Bulls, and he actually was overseas when he got the news about this trade that now sends him to Minnesota, reuniting with his former coach, Tom Thibodeau. Coach Tibbs, a coach that they should not have even gotten rid of in Chicago. Frank Horberg, he doesn't know what he's doing out there. But at the same time, when I saw that Jimmy was going to Minnesota, I said, wow, that's shocking, one. But number two, he comes into a situation that is pretty ideal. A lot of talent now surrounds Jimmy Butler for this Minnesota Timberwolves team. He can come in, he can be the vet, he can be the leader, playing alongside guys like Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, I was shocked that this happened, Isaac, because I don't think anybody saw it coming. However, this is, and Jimmy may be upset about it because I don't know who the reporter was last night, but he was kind of doing interviews. He actually interviewed Lonzo and LaVar Ball. Yeah, they interviewed LaVar Ball last night, right? But he actually got a text, and I have to Google who this reporter was, but I've seen him before. But he got a text from Jimmy Butler. He shot a text out to Jimmy Butler and said, hey, would you like to comment on this trade? And he didn't know about it at all. And then he sends a text back and says, you know, I don't want to comment right now. I'll comment later. But that move was shocking, Isaac.
Yeah, it really was. And I think this totally switches the landscape of basketball right now within the NBA, because not only is Jimmy Butler going over to Minnesota, it's another player who goes over from the West to the East to make the conference disparity in talent even more one-sided. So another competition, I guess, for the Warriors and all of that, but let's face it, nobody's stacking up to them. The thing is, this Minnesota team is young, brimming with talent, brimming with potential still, pairing up, as you said, with Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns, plus Ricky Rubio is a good point guard for that team. I think they've got a lot of potential going forward. That move was shocking to me, considering that Butler did want to stay with the Bulls, but the good news for him, linking back up with head coach Tom Thibodeau, the guy who really elevated his game to the current ceiling that's at, I think Jimmy Butler can really lead this team not only to the playoffs, but maybe future rings down the road.
And yeah, for sure. And, you know, a few other picks I want to note here that I really, really liked. I love Zach Collins to the Trailblazers at 10. I think that he will be a nice fit with Nurkic over there. Add a bit of floor spacing and rim protection in time. I think that chemistry will develop. I love that move. Donovan Mitchell, a player that I really thought when he was on the board and the Pistons were sitting there at number 12, I was a bit shocked that the Pistons did not go after Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell ended up going the pick right after the Pistons to the Jazz at 13. We talked about his crazy metrics at the NBA Combine, and he brings a lot of things on both ends of the floor. I think he's going to be an absolute stud in time in the NBA. The Pistons did address a need, though, in drafting Luke Kennard. He's a shooter. The Pistons need shooting. But, you know, I sat back on my couch last night, and I was texting many people as I watched the draft, and I was actually talking to my uncle. And he shot me a text immediately after the Pistons chose Luke Kennard from Duke. And now I want to put this disclaimer out there as well. My uncle does not watch college basketball. He is an NBA nut. But when they drafted Luke Kennard, he said, huh? What? He was a bit confused. And I had to explain him because I watch college basketball. Of course, we follow it here at Current Sports. We watch pretty much everything here, right? Except soccer, Isaac. I'm sorry. But when it comes to Luke, when it comes to Luke Kennard, you know, I told him he's the best available shooter, probably the best shooter in this year's draft class. I mentioned in the headliners how the Pistons have ranked historically in the last 5 years among the bottom feeders when it comes to shooting in the National Basketball Association. This will help this team. And then he came back and hit me with a nice comment that had me thinking. He said, yeah, Al, but good shooters stand out on good teams. And then I began to think. And I said, that is very true, because every good shooter that I can think of that's played in the National Basketball Association plays on a playoff contending team, not an average or horrible team, because good teams know how to find shooters on the basketball court. And with this being such a shooter's league now, those teams usually thrive. Thought that was a very good point, and we all know that the Pistons are so up and down and inconsistent. They have missed the playoffs 7 of the last 8 years. I think Luke can come in and can contribute offensively, but yeah, defense is a big question mark, as you just heard from Stan Van Gundy in the headliner say, and the Pistons got to get better, period. And I think it's inevitable that Reggie Jackson will not be a part of this franchise much longer. I hope that a trade happens that can send him somewhere in exchange for a true point guard. Anyway, DJ Wilson to the Bucks. I really like that a lot, because now this becomes possibly the most lankiest team that we've seen in a while. I mean, my goodness, Isaac, there is so much length on this team. And, you know, you bring in a guy in DJ Wilson who has such a long reach and pair him with guys like what Thon Maker, you know, Greg Monroe,
Giannis, Jabari, of course.
Giannis, yeah. Antetokounmpo, Jabari Parker. Can you even get a shot off going against those guys?
I don't think there's been a longer team in NBA history, I'll be honest with you, because this is now the trend. You want guys with wingspan. Height doesn't matter, but right. We talked about yesterday when we were both advocating for the selection of Donovan Mitchell. The guy's got a 6'10 wingspan. That stands out to you, those sorts of metrics. So, no, I think this is a really good fit. Thought they might have reached a little bit. I thought DJ Wilson would more slide to 24-25 range, so 17 might have been a little bit high, but at the same time, if you've got your guy, no reason to pass him up. So that was really a good fit for the Bucks.
Yeah, reached, pun intended, right?
Yeah,
there. Oh
exactly.
My goodness, DJ Wilson, dude. Derek White to the Spurs at 29. Hey, it's the Spurs. They find a way to build their franchise. Derek White, a lot of people are saying that's another steal. I would not question Greg Popovich. I think it is, Isaac. Frank Jackson to your New Orleans Pelicans at 31. I mean, you know, Jackson is a first-round talent who goes to a great situation out in New Orleans, I think. And you know, you look at Jackson now and you pair him with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. We'll see how that chemistry gels, but I think Jackson is a guy who can come in and make an immediate impact with your Pelicans.
Yeah, he needs to work a little bit on his ball distribution. He's a great scorer when he's on. He's streaky, but he knows when he's streaky. He's got an experienced style of play, so he's not going to hurt you with inefficiency. It's just whether he can find the open men. He only averaged 2.7 assists per 40 minutes adjusted. We need more from a point guard.
Let's bring in Deshaun Tate from CBS Radio down in Atlanta right now, who is patiently waiting. And I want to get Deshaun's takes on the big dogs of the draft, guys like Markel Fultz and Josh Jackson and Lonzo Ball and so on and so forth. Deshaun, first off, welcome to the show. How you doing, my man?
Pretty good, Al, man. Going off a little bit of a limited sleep, if you will, a little bit. But other than that, I told you what it was for me. Most important days, man, in my life of all 365. I got 2 days, man, and that's a selection Sunday as well as the NBA draft. So I'm good now, man. We're kind of past it. Now it's time to get ready to prepare for the summer league. I'll be flying out there pretty soon within the next couple weeks, so I got to find somewhere to get some rest in between.
Oh, boy. Drink plenty of coffee, my friend. Now, I want to dive into this and just simply ask you, is there anything that surprised you last night? I'm sure that's an understatement. Or no?
Maybe Malik Monk falling to 11. I thought that he might be taken before that for a guy that for a guy that up until halfway through the season, almost a little more than halfway through the season of the college basketball season, you know, a guy I thought was definitely a top five pick, if not a top three perhaps, falling out of the top 10. I really didn't expect that. But other than that, there isn't really, really too much more than that. I mean, is it a stretch for Jason Tatum to be taken before Josh Jackson? Most people wouldn't think so, but in my mind, I like to think that Josh Jackson is easily, hands down, the better player. I think that Tatum is a better jump shooter, and I don't even think that he's, you know, hand over fist that much more of a better jump shooter than Josh Jackson. At the end of the day, both of them are phenomenal players. One got taken number three, one got taken number four. But, of course, like I said, that probably doesn't surprise me nearly as much, considering Josh Jackson didn't work out for the Boston Celtics within a day or two from the draft. I'm pretty sure that that didn't sit well with Danny Ainge and company.
No, it didn't, because Danny Ainge, I'm pretty sure you saw this today, Deshaun. I mean, Danny Ainge, and he just came out and said he was flat out mad that the workout was canceled. The character of Josh Jackson is something that Isaac and I talked about before today's show, because, you know, we bring up what happened, the incident that happened at Kansas. After, you know, a situation at a bar, he ended up damaging a certain women's basketball, Kansas women basketball player's vehicle. Him canceling a workout when Danny Ainge is already in the air flying, that would irk me too, I must be honest. If Josh Jackson would have worked out for the Boston Celtics, do you think he would have been chosen over Tatum?
I don't think that it's a guarantee. I think that him being chosen over Tatum would definitely be much more likely. I'm not going to say that it would be in stone 100%. But one thing I will say is that I think it was probably pretty even. And with Josh not, you know, being able to make the workout or canceling the workout, that pretty much solidified what the Boston Celtics were going to do in that position. And it does concern me a little bit, you know, considering Josh Jackson and some of his antics or whatnot. I mean, he's a basketball player, but I honestly think that he's the type of kid as to where he's probably good in so many other areas, so many other things of his life, and really talented at many things. Those are some of the things that I pick up from Josh Jackson, and knowing some of the people mutually that he knows, is that he's talented in a lot of other things. And basketball just happens to be one that comes naturally to him. But sometimes I question his seriousness. You know, he's a competitive kid. I wouldn't call him a troublemaker like I've heard a couple other people call him, or not necessarily a troublemaker, but, you know, hard head or so on and so forth, stuff like that. I think he's just a competitive kid, and you can't confuse the two. But this is going to make a man out of him, because you're going up against grown men who feed their families and NBA GMs who are giving you an opportunity, investing a whole lot of money in you to make really good decisions on and off the court. So I think as long as he checks that at the door, nobody questions the kind of talent that he could be at the next level. And I think he's a franchise changer for sure.
Final question for you, Deshaun. You look at the top 10, just bear with me here. Markelle Fultz, 1, to the 76ers. 2, Lonzo Ball to the L.A. Lakers. 3, Jason Tatum to the Celtics. 4, Josh Jackson to the Phoenix Suns. 5, De'Aaron Fox to the Sacramento Kings. 6, Jonathan Isaac to the Orlando Magic. Lauri Markkanen at 7 to the Chicago Bulls. Frank Ntilikina, am I saying that right?
I still have not learned.
Yeah, I think we're both
better than I ever could.
Right. Frank Ntilikina, I believe, to the New York Knicks at 8, 9, Dennis Smith Jr. to the Dallas Mavericks, and then 10, Zach Collins to the Portland Trail Blazers. Out of those 10, those lottery picks, Deshaun, which ones are the names we're going to remember the most as their careers proceed?
In a positive way, I hope you're asking me. I think that it's easily Lonzo Ball. I think he's going to be the star of this class just because of everything that he can do. I certainly hope, I can't guarantee it, but I certainly hope and got a good feeling that Dennis Smith Jr. will be another one of those guys. De'Aaron Fox, I like De'Aaron Fox, but some of these guys I have good feelings about more than some of the others. Like, I get a good feeling about Fox more than I do Jonathan Isaac, who I think is still a bit raw offensively because of what he can do and the way he adjusts, you know, his speed of the game and things like that. But Fultz is a scorer, but the problem is when Fultz isn't scoring, I don't know what else Fultz can do to have an effect on the game. Those are just a couple of the guys that you mentioned that I can see that you will remember their name. Obviously, Josh Jackson being another one, like we talked about before. If he can keep that mental under control, he can be just as high, if not higher, as Lonzo Ball, who I have projected to be the top guy in this class.
Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio down in the ATL. Deshaun, thank you so much for your time, my man.
Al, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will get to our second guest for today's Current Sports. We will chat with Renee Hill, mother of the late MSU football player Mylon Hicks. That and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
With the first pick in the 2017 NBA Draft, the Philadelphia 76ers select Markelle Fultz from the University of Washington. With the second pick in the 2017 NBA Draft, the Los Angeles Lakers select Lonzo Ball.
I know your family's with you here tonight, your dad and your brothers, but your mom, Tina, is at home watching. She suffered a stroke in February. What does it mean to you to be able to play at home because of your mother and being able to be close to her?
Yeah, it helps a lot. I'm glad to be home so she can come to most of the games. And she's getting better every day, so that's great. And I know she's happy at home watching right now.
With the fourth pick in the 2017 NBA Draft, the Phoenix Suns select Josh Jackson from the University of Kansas. With the 17th pick in the 2017 NBA Draft, the Milwaukee Bucks select DJ Wilson from the University of Michigan.
Ah, yes, we're taking your calls and comments on the NBA Draft last night. Anything that shocked you? That one, that last pick shocked me. I didn't think that DJ Wilson was going to go that high. We want to hear from you, though. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our second guest for today's Current Sports. This has been an interview that we have been, it's been in the works for a while now. Mylon Hicks, a Detroit native who played football at Renaissance High School, went on to play football at Michigan State University. From 2010 to 2014, he would then go on to sign with the NFL San Francisco 49ers as an underrated free agent before being released at the end of training camp. The Canadian Football League then became his next step, signing with the Calgary Stampede, and then September 25th happened. On that day, Hicks was outside of Marquee Beer Market Nightclub in Calgary around 2:30 a.m. An altercation, which began in the bar, then moved outside where it escalated, leading to Hicks unfortunately being shot. He would later die from his injuries. Earlier this month, Nelson Nugella was ordered to stand trial for second-degree murder. Hicks has been described as a bright young man who, MSU head football coach Mark D'Antonio said, quote, just lit up a room when he walked in. To talk about that bright light, we now invite the mother of Hicks to Current Sports, Renee Hill. Renee, thank you so much for taking some time this afternoon to join us. How you doing?
I'm hanging in here. How are you?
Doing very well, very well. So I first want to start by asking you, how have you held up these past 9 months?
Grace and mercy. And that's how I make it day to day, and faith and my my belief that I'll see him again one day.
Renee, can you take us through the morning of September 25th? Where were you when you found out what happened?
I was in Indianapolis watching Myla's little sister compete. She goes to Central University in Xenia, Ohio, and I was there watching her compete in a cheerleading competition. And upon leaving the competition, I returned back to the hotel room where we were staying in Indianapolis, and I got a call the next morning. Or rather, I got a text from a friend who asked me, do you want me to go over to your house? And I was thinking that something may have happened at her home, and she was just a little confused and texted me an error. As I began to lay back down without answering her text, got a little feeling that says, respond. So I got up and texted her back, why would you be going over to my house? Is everything okay with you? And then I got a call, and she asked me, had I heard? And I asked her what, and she told me what had happened. And I immediately responds, well, not my son. He's not even here. He's not in the United States. He's in Canada, because I just never believed anything like that would happen on Canada's turf. So that's how I found out.
And what happened after that? Did you drive to Canada at that point?
No. Actually, my husband and I end up picking up Talia because, from my understanding, things were going viral at that time. So she had gotten the news about her brother's demise quicker than I had, because I don't do Facebook or anything like that. So, again, the phones start just going crazy, and I immediately drove to Ohio to be there for my daughter to pick her up. And then my husband and I drove back to Detroit with all of that burden on us. We drove all the way back to see what was going on, and I had other children at home that I needed to get to support them, because they had just heard about their brother. And I hear that my daughter was laying in the middle of the street, his sister, who got the knock on the door from the government. Canada had alerted the government over here. So they came to the house and let her know that Mylan had been hurt very bad over there, what actually had passed over there. And so I started getting calls from different neighbors and things, and they saying that my daughter was in the middle of the street. So I was eager to get back here first and foremost. And then I flew out to Calgary after I checked on home.
Renee, when you are going through this timeline, how are you keeping it together, or are you keeping it together as a mother?
Well, I'm in a club that I never wanted to be a part of. And for some strange reason, I've been chosen to be in this club where you lose your child, and you lose your child to sickening, no excuse, no reason for it, gun violence. That's hard. That's hard to deal with. It's really hard to cope. I can only imagine someone trying to go through this and get through this without having some faith base, something to clinch, something to hold on to, because it's most difficult. I'll be the first to say that. And for one, because Mylan did it all right. He did it all right. He lived right. He walked right. He talked right. He was just righteous through and through, a loyal person, a good guy. I call him my rock, because he was so solid. For someone to lose someone like that, a mother to lose her child, there's no other way to get through it but by holding on to some act, some form of faith. As tears stream down my eyes now, it's only faith that gets me through, and believe it or not, a pillow. Ooh, a pillow that belonged to Mylan in Calgary. When I went to his apartment to gather a few of his things, there was this one pillow that stood out. It was gray, kind of dirty, like You could tell it was his sweat. And I've come to find that when he used to come in from practice, he would dive right on that pillow sometimes, and that's where he would fall asleep. And so his scent, that football scent, that musk and all of that stuff that I would call grotesque otherwise, became a blessing to me. And so I sleep wrapped up in it every night. And when I say every night, I take two pillows that I sleep with that are mine and put on the top of. I lay my head and I take Mylan's pillow and I hold it and cradle it like a baby. I oftentimes kiss it because it was my son. It reminds me of him, his scent. So it's something that I keep. I dare not wash. I don't allow anyone else to touch it. And if it's moved, I'm disturbed. So that's the kind of impact that I deal with every day. It has not gotten any better since the 25th because my son was not supposed to lose his life like that. He deserved so much more. He was only trying to make it. And he was not in an altercation. He was not. I've come to find through witness testimony and through talking with the detectives, Mylan had little to do with anything. In fact, he had arrived at the club late. And the guy who did the shooting had been a pain in the behind to everyone in there. I hear most because the team, of course, had all of the young ladies flocking to him. And he was just a little... He was in his feelings, I would say. And so he began to pick. One of the coaches called me and told me that he had been cutting up all night, the guy who did what he did to my son. Mm-hmm. And he had been calling names, shoving. They said that my son, when he came in and witnessed all of the commotion, which I was a little angry at him about because he had been taught when he sees something, if it wasn't kosher, just to keep moving. Just go ahead and make a U-turn. Leave, but he didn't. I heard that he bought the little guy a drink, gave him a hug, and told him, you know, it's not that serious, whatever was going on. This is what I hear from the coach and all. And later he would come out and produce a gun. I was concerned whether or not Mylan was a target, and I get different stories, but through the detectives, I hear that he was not a target, that he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. That when the guy began to shoot, Mylan, he sagged a little bit, that Detroit side of him, his pants. Mm-hmm. I used to get at him about it, but I don't believe this is my summation, I just don't believe he had the momentum to sprint as fast as he could have had his pants not been compromised pretty much around his waist. So imagine perhaps being a little tipsy, having to grab your pants and move in flight for your life. The bullet was faster than him.
So, Renee, you're telling me that when Mylan allegedly walked into the bar and saw this individual, who's allegedly named as Nelson Nugella, when he saw this individual kind of cutting up, Mylan sort of reached out to him and actually bought him a drink to try and calm down the situation?
Yeah, that's what he did.
Wow. That's the type of, that speaks to the character of Mylan Hicks. That's who he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Renee Hill, mother of late MSU football player Mylan Hicks. Renee, why is gun violence so present and so prevalent, specifically when it comes to today's youth? Because I, like Mylan and like yourself, I'm from the west side of Detroit, and I've witnessed many things growing up on the west side of Detroit, specifically when it comes to gun violence. Why is it so prevalent in today's youth?
Well, for one, it begins with the individual, and I just don't believe that they have that human quality, that value for life, not even their own. Because, for instance, Nelson, and I don't pronounce his last name, but anyway, he's going away for the majority of his life. So that value set is just not it's not important. I don't know if it's part of the rearing. I don't know if it's due to those who you keep company with. I know it's a lack of God. That's my belief, because, you know, God is life, that's love. And if you learn that from a child and carry that trait with you, then you're very less likely to get involved in certain things. So it's a, it could be an array of things. But a lack of consideration for human life, and then guns are so prevalent in terms of the easy to get a hold to access. We've been fighting politically, as one would know. We've been fighting to get guns off the street, background checks, all of that been dismissed because you want to make money. You want to be part of groups that say, hey, let's not infringe upon our rights. But it's not them that's getting killed. It's our young. It's our youth. And unfortunately, it's predominantly in the Black culture. And that's what really stunned me, because I was so glad to get Mylon away from here. I remember him being cut from San Fran. And I remember him coming home, and he didn't have to say a word. I knew my child. I knew that it was eating away at him that he did not make that team, because that was his entire desire all his life from a child, is to get out there and be productive on an NFL team. He just wanted to. And I helped inspire some of that, telling him he could be all that he could be and anything he wanted to be. And if that's what he wanted to be, he was smart enough to be that, but to also get an education so that you would have something to fall back on in the case of injury or some things just didn't go right. Though I know he did not want that for himself, I still needed to, as his mom, encourage him to always have a backup plan. And so I did. And when he was cut from San Fran, he came home. I remember walking into the room. I met a down spirit, and I immediately closed the door, because he didn't like to be messed with too much. He was really a quiet storm. He was an introvert. He wasn't real talkative. He was Mylon, but he was a great guy. He wasn't disrespectful. In 23 years, I've never been disrespected. Mm-hmm. By my son.
Wow.
Not all parents can say that. In 23 years, I've never been disrespected by Mylon. I say that with emphasis, because when I told Mylon to do something from a child, he did it. And then when he got older, if I told him to do something he didn't want to do, he would express to me in kindness and respectfully so how he felt that he was a man. Why should he? So I stopped telling him and I started advising him. And it was up to him to accept or reject my advice. But never once, whether he accepted it or rejected it, he never once shown disrespect. He heard it. He would always hear me out. And when I finished talking, he would ask me, Ma, you through? And that's a quote. And it was a beautiful smile after the you through. I can see it now. And so I was so glad when I went into the room and I said, hey, Mylon, I said, I know you're down. I said, but it's up to you to pick yourself up. I said, if you still want what you want, which was that field to land somewhere on a team, mm-hmm. then you need to get up, shake it off, and make the devil take it back. That's what I told them. I said, now you can lay here and feel sorry for yourself, or you can get up and make it happen. I said, because I'm your mom, and I'm your biggest fan on or off the field. And I just believe, Mylon, what's for you is for you. So you take that and run with it if you want to. Or if you want to stay in here and sulk, it's up to you. The next thing I know, he got up. He grabbed some little, I call them, put them on the football field and you're running between them. They're red. I don't know the
like
name
pylons,
of them.
Anyway. Some pylons, maybe?
Yeah, he buy them at Walmart. So he had about 8 or 9 of them, and he took them and he went up to Refford, and you know where Refford
was. Oh, of course.
The school is torn down, so he just went on that field. And somebody told me later on that day, they said, I've seen your son running like he was being shot at, ironically. That means he was getting it, but he was working out. He was creating his own workout, and that's what I expected of him.
Renee,
not to take whatever.
I want to bring up, before we get out of here, I want to bring up his recruitment.
to Michigan State, and how that process went, and what was your extent, what was your involvement in the recruiting process and the relationship that you had with Mark D'Antonio and the coaching staff here. Can you take us back to that period during his senior year at Renaissance?
Sure, I can. There were multiple recruits. And when I say multiple, too many to count. In fact, Milan was one of the highest recruits in Renaissance at graduation when they called it out. He was one of the, they actually quote dollars and cents in terms of scholarships, school rides to these different schools. But it was Michigan State that he would land at, I think, one or two reasons. Very first one, they may have been not the very first. I know Vanderbilt was the first to reach out for him for a ride, and then Michigan State came on board. But Chris Norman was there, and I believe Dana Dixon at the time had gone before Milan. And Milan wanted to stick with that family more so than anything, not necessarily Michigan State at that moment, but because Dana Dixon and some of his other friends had gone on, his brothers, I would call them. And I recall him calling me at work, letting me know that something was wrong with his phone. And I was like, Milan, I'm at work. He's like, Ma, you got to get this fixed. I'm waiting on MS. I said, you waiting on what? I'm waiting on Michigan State to give me a call. They may very well give me a call. So I said, okay, all right, I'll make sure your phone works. I called the phone company, whatever was wrong, we fixed it. And Milan ended up getting a call. And I remember the little fella coming home just as happy as can be. But prior to that, I remember D'Antonio and another coach, they came to the home, a personal visit. And it was delightful. It was respectful. And I always seek to get a feel for those that I'm in company with. And I got a pretty good reception from D'Antonio. And then I got a pretty good feeling. I think his name was Burnett.
Harlan Barnett.
Right. Yeah. And I got a pretty good feel for him. But at the end of the day, I told Milan it's his decision because the Indiana coach was giving me the blues. He wanted Milan that bad.
Right.
And so I knew where Michigan State was a good school academically. I was more concerned about the academics than I was the sports side of it, the athletic side. But I knew my son. I knew Milan was no dummy. When I tell you he was bright, he was bright. He was very bright. Oftentimes, I would look at him and stare because I was in awe of just how smart he was. From a baby on up, he could do things that, for his age, just seemed like it was unreal. Mm-hmm. He could take things apart, put things back together again. He knew how things work. He was a critical thinker. He was just smart. Someone you could benefit from if you just stuck around him. And so I wasn't concerned about the academic side. And then Renaissance in itself had prepared him for some of the long study. I remember him just getting there, and he called me, and I asked him how he was doing. And he said he was doing okay. There was some type of little program he had to go through for the summer.
Yeah.
He said that a lot of the kids didn't get it, but he got it. And I told him, I'm not surprised. I said, you're just that bright. Always encourage him, let him know he's just that bright. As it relates to the relationship with D'Antonio,
right?
I did not have a problem with D'Antonio. I felt at first there was a lot of, before I had an understanding, let me say this, before I had an understanding, because Milan didn't play much. So as a parent, I'm not going to lie, that bothered me. That befuddled me to the top. I just was like, okay, my son just as productive as the next child. Why isn't he on the field? What are the challenges? And then I knew that they were, at that time, the fact that he was not playing as much began to weigh on him. It began to weigh heavily on him to the point that he almost wanted to transfer. And I used to tell him, Milan, God can't use you if you can't stand. You have to be able to stand. To run, why? Think about it, son. You'll go somewhere else, and you'll run into, if not the same thing, something worse. Stand. I say eventually you'll get on that field. So there was a couple of sprints where he did get on the field. There were a couple of times when I felt that he should have been on the field. But like I said, I didn't have the full understanding of it. It was not my game, so I didn't know. I'm just looking from a parent's eye. And I called Dan Antonio myself, and I just talked to him. And I was glad that he received my call. I wanted to know, was there something going on with my child that he was not able to get on the field outside of some small injuries? Was he not able to see that field, and why? And Dan Antonio explained some things to me, probably some improvement things that Milan need to seize on. And my concern was, were you all pointing it out? Because I guarantee you, if you point out anything that he needed to improve on and gave him some instructions as to how, oh, he figured out the rest. I had no doubt in my mind. So,
love it.
The conversation was respectful, and eventually Milan saw the field for a little while.
Renee, before we get you out of here, we only have about literally 2 minutes left, and we admire your strength and your courage to even talk about this subject and joining us here on the show. I can just feel your strength as you talk. Renee, how should your son, Milan Hicks, be remembered?
Milan should be remembered for who Milan was. If anybody knew Milan, you knew how Milan was. Loyal, 100% in your corner. He was a giver, not a taker. And he was a man of valor. He believed in Christ. He wore it on his chest. And wherever he went, he exhibited that Christ-like behavior, that respect, that love for others, and kindness. And Milan was never a hater. He watched all of his friends go, make it to the league, and he never held. No animosity, no feeling of you made it, I didn't, I ain't gonna mess with you no more. Mm-hmm. He was in that corner 100%. Milan was the kind of young man that we need today.
Renee Hill, the mother of late MSU football player Milan Hicks. Renee, we admire your strength. We admire your courage. And I know your son is looking down mighty proud at you right now. Renee, thank you so much.
God bless you.
All right. That ends today's Current Sports. Isaac, I have no words, man. We'll recap this interview, of course, on Monday's show. We'll also roll in the swap meet with James Moore, because the swap meet, you don't want to miss it, folks. It's a very important one. But I can't follow anything like that.
No. Tears in my eyes, no words in my mouth. Yep. That's it.
What strength. Thank you so much, Renee Hill, for that. We're out of time, folks. We'll see you on Monday's Current Sports. Well, we'll recap the weekend that will be. And again, we'll roll in. We'll be sure to roll in the swap meet with James Moore as he elaborates on the choices that young athletes make when making it to the professional realm. We'll see you next week, folks. As always, take care and be easy, people.